సాతం బృహస్తవదనం అవ్యగ్రాత్మా గతిం సతి అలక్ష్య లక్షణాభిజ్ఞా సతం ప్రహస్తవదనం అవ్యగ్రాత్మా గతిం సతి అలక్ష్య లక్షణాభిజ్ఞా తమా ప్రచక్షుచే స్మిత మతిజి సాతం ప్రహస్తవదనం అవ్యగ్రాత్మా గతిం సతి అలక్ష్యలక్షణాభిజ్ఞా సమ్యక్ ప్రచక్షుతి స్మృతా
సా షీ తం హిమ్ ప్రహస్త ఫిల్డ్ విత్ జాయ్ వదనం హూస్ ఫేస్ అవ్యగ్ర అన్అజిటేటెడ్ ఆత్మా of whose body, Gatim, the movement, Sati, the saintly young woman, Alakshya, noting, Lakshana, of symptoms, Abhigya, an expert knower, Samapritchat, inquired, Suchi, pured, Smita, with a smile. Translation. Noting the Brahmana's joyful face and serene movements, the saintly Rukmini, who could expertly interpret such symptoms, inquired from him with a pure smile. There is no purport, we will continue further. The Brahmana announced to her the arrival of Lord Yadunandana and relayed the Lord's promise to marry her. Princess Vaidarbhi was overjoyed to learn of Krishna's arrival. Not finding anything at hand suitable to offer the Brahmana, she simply bowed down to him. The king, upon hearing that Krishna and Balaram had come and were eager to witness his daughter's wedding, went forth with abundant offerings to greet them as music resounded, presenting them with madhuparka, new clothing and other desirable gifts. He worshipped them according to standard rituals. Generous King Bhishmaka arranged opulent accommodations for the two lords and also for their army and entourage. In this way, he afforded them proper hospitality. Thus, it was that Bhishmaka gave all desirable things to the kings who had assembled for the occasion, honoring them as befitted their political power, age, physical prowess and wealth. When the residents of Vidarbhapura heard that Lord Krishna had come, they all went to see him. With the cup palms of their eyes, they drank the nectar of his lotus feet, face. The people of the city said, "Rukmini and no one else deserves to become his wife. And he also, possessing such flawless beauty, is the only suitable husband for Princess Bhaishmi." Just read the verse. This is verse number 37. అశ్యేవ భార్య భువితం రుక్మిణి అర్హతి నాపర అసావ్ అపి అనవాద్యాత్మ భైష్మ్య సామోచిత పతి. I'll read the translation again. The people of the city said, "Rukmini and no one else deserves to become his wife. And he also, possessing such flawless beauty, is the only suitable husband for Princess Bhaishmi." Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti, this text combines the statements made by different citizens. Some pointed out that Rukmini was a suitable wife for Krishna. Others said that no one else was suitable. Similarly, some stated that Krishna was the most suitable for Rukmini, and others stated that no one else would be a suitable husband for her. ఓం అజ్ఞాంతి నిరంధస్య జ్ఞానాంజన శలాకయ చక్షురోన్మిలితం యేన తస్మై శ్రీ గురవే నమః. శ్రీ చైతన్య మనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూప కదా మయ్యం దదాతి స్వపదాంతికం. వందేహం శ్రీగురు శ్రీయుతః పదకమలం
श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातां सहगणा रघुनाथां वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वंच कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामो हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
हरे कृष्णा So, we are in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam where Rukmini Devi is getting the news of Krishna entering Mathura, entering Vidarbha, and this is bringing her a lot of joy. So, this episode basically is talking about how Rukmini is indirectly getting, just by seeing the Brahmana's face, an indication that Krishna is entering into Vidarbha and the possibility of him kidnapping her and marrying her. So, the Vedic culture talks about face reading. The Vedic culture talks about understanding people not based on their words but based on their moods. Modern culture, we do not understand people's words also, what to speak of understanding their face and their mood. So here Rukmini Devi, so basically a lot of energy gets saved when we can understand communication properly. A lot of energy gets saved when we can understand people's intentions and hearts properly. Unfortunately in today's times, because people have such complicated thoughts and complicated thinking, it's difficult to, you know, they try to think something else, they try to show something else, and they're actually feeling something else, you know. So they are very complicated in their own internal systems, that externally only complications manifest. But here, this Brahmana, apparently the Vedic culture talks about Brahminical order means simplicity. Brahminical order means transparency. And here the Brahmana didn't have to speak anything. Just by seeing him, only Rukmini Devi understood what he has to say and what he wants to convey, basically. And of course, the whole culture of how Bhishmaka is inviting Krishna and Balaram. Actually, it is explained that Bhishmaka never wanted to marry Rukmini to Shishupal. He wanted to marry Rukmini to Krishna only. But unfortunately, his son was too overpowering. In the material world, it happens always that the actual power is in somebody's hand, but actual control is in somebody else's hand only. It happens everywhere in the material world, and it happening in Bhishmaka's kingdom is not a big deal. So Rukmi, though he was not the king, he was really controlling the king like anything. And the king was his own father. The culture of disrespect towards the parents, the culture of overpowering the thoughts of the parents, is a culture that always existed. Most children in this world are always wanting to follow what the parents say. But there are many children in this world who are wanting to do what they want and force their parents to do what they like to do. We find today's culture, the parents not really planning for their children, but children planning the parents' future, you know. So here, Bhishmaka, we find that Rukmini is doing all the planning for Rukmini, his sister, and for the whole kingdom. Because alliance with Shishupal is not only going to affect Rukmini, but it is going to affect Vidarbha also. So a lot of role of Rukmini is involved over here. But when Bhishmaka saw that Krishna entered into Vidarbha, he realized that another power has come in. a power that is beyond Rukmi also, a power that is beyond his helplessness also, a power that is beyond anybody's likes and dislikes, a power that is really something substantial. So Krishna is entering Mathura, entering Vidarbha. Krishna's entering any place in this world is actually going to herald celebration only. So from Bhishmaka's point of view, he was celebrating. But all the citizens of Vidarbha, they were also celebrating. See, it is explained that every citizen of Vidarbha, they were convinced that the only person who could marry Rukmini suitable was Krishna. And they were desperately waiting when Krishna will come to marry their princess. Apparently, it seems that Rukmini was a very popular princess in Vidarbha. And everyone loved her. And naturally, because everyone loved her, everyone wanted the best for her. Wanting the best for the person you love is most natural. Unfortunately, when there is no love, externally you may say, I want the best for you. But internally you are only cursing. You don't want the best for the person you envy actually. So every citizen of Vidarbha was desperate that Rukmini marries only Krishna. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in this purport, verse, he explains that in this one sentence, there were seven sentences combined together. Basically, how every citizen felt that only Rukmini was fit for Krishna and only Krishna was fit for Rukmini. And they were very eagerly expressing their opinions among each other. So the entire Vidarbha knew that Rukmini was meant for Krishna. Bhishmaka the king knew Rukmini was meant for Krishna. Rukmini herself knew she was meant for Krishna. And Krishna also knew Rukmini was meant for him only. Only one person didn't know, that was Rukmini. Very surprising, you know. He was the most important, decider in this whole thing. And more interesting than that is the fact that everyone in the entire country knew that Krishna is going to marry Rukmini and Krishna has come for that purpose only. Practically everyone knew. And but in spite of everyone knowing and in spite of so much time to plan, Rukmini couldn't execute or couldn't really stop Krishna from carrying out his plans. So when the Lord decides something, it happens. And how it happens, it's most mystical. We will get to see that section a little later. We have to wait for the excitement to grow a little more. But I was thinking that we should discuss a little bit about how wherever and whenever Krishna enters, there is a certain type of celebration that happens and there is a certain type of excitement that happens. And I was trying to meditate on different episodes, different sections and stories in the Bhagavatam and the scriptures where the entry of the Lord creates a certain type of revolution, creates a certain type of flavor that is different at different times of his entry. But every time that the Lord enters into any place, there is a certain type of excitement and a certain type of love that grows unlimitedly. So I'll begin by discussing the entry of Krishna into Mathura. There is a very interesting verse in the Niti where this verse says, what is a festival? For different people, different things are festivals. So this verse says, Nirmantranotsavam vipra gavo nava trinotsavam patyatyushta bharya aham Krishna ranotsavam. This verse says that nirmantrotsava vipra, which means that for a vipra, for a brahmana, nimantran, invitation to a feast is festival. Gavo navatrinotsavam, which means that for a cow, fresh grass is a festival. Whenever fresh grass grows, that's a festival for the cow. Patyotyushta bharya, which means the arrival of a husband is a festival for a wife. And what about for a devotee? Aham Krishna ranotsavam. For a devotee, hearing the pastimes of the Lord, hearing the pastimes of Krishna is a festival. Aham Krishna ranotsavam. Hearing the pastime of Krishna performing Herculean tasks, performing wonderful events is a festival. Specifically, this one is talking about Ranotsavam, is talking about Krishna sitting on the chariot and driving Arjuna. So, Whenever Krishna enters, there is a festival that naturally happens as a result of the entry. Here, Bhishmaka's palace or Bhishmaka's kingdom, there is a festival that is happening as a result of Krishna entering. Though Krishna is entering to create a disturbance actually. Krishna is entering to create a change in the... Can you imagine a wedding is going to happen? The bride and groom are already selected. And just few hours later, the wedding is going to happen. And just before that, the bride is lost. So it's not exactly going to be like a, you know, the traditional marriages. But it's going to be something different. And everybody knows that. But still, the fact that Krishna is entering, it is creating a festive mood in this city. When Akrur brought Krishna to Mathura, and the description of Krishna entering Mathura is there, it is described of how every person in Mathura was perceiving Krishna in different ways. It is explained that when Krishna entered Mathura, the women were so eager to see Krishna, they were so eager to have darshan, the first glimpse of Krishna entering their city. Because all their lives, from their childhood, they have grown up hearing Krishna's stories. And they have grown up waiting for that, you know, the Taranhar, the person who is going to save them to come. And they know that Krishna is the one who is going to do it. And they all are frustrated in Kamsa's rule. And just when Krishna is entering, they come to know that Krishna is coming into Mathura. From the time Akrur left Mathura to go to Vrindavan and get Krishna back, there is a preparation going on in everybody's mood. Krishna is going to come. So naturally the eagerness had been building up from the time Akrur's chariot left Vrindavan, left Mathura. So chariot of Akrur created different moods in different places. When the chariot left Vrindavan, it broke hearts. But when the chariot left Mathura, it created hope. So they were waiting for the sound of the chariot to come back. And of course, Akrur's chariot did come back. But Akrur left Krishna in the entrance of Mathura and he came with an empty chariot again. So, empty chariot entering anywhere is a pain. So, we find that... So, Akrur went back to his home because Krishna told him that he will not accompany him. Krishna wanted to walk. He wanted to take a tour slowly. He wanted to absorb the Mathura city slowly. And he wanted to relish and have his own fun in his own way. Official entry is one thing. And unofficial entry is one thing. Krishna was being on Akrur's chariot would have been an official entry. Straight to Kamsa's palace, straight to Akrur's house. A very official type of entry. Krishna, so far in Vrindavan, he has always been an unofficial person. And here suddenly, you know, he doesn't want to change his mood immediately. He wants to take his own time to change his mood. Because he is very sensitive to the fact that his friends are with him. You know, because his friends are with him, he doesn't want to change mood immediately. Suddenly if he enters into Mathura with a chariot and his friends are on the gate of Mathura, it doesn't look good. So he stopped the chariot, got down, joined his friends and walked inside Mathura. And the women of Mathura, they were excited, they were eager to see Krishna. And the moment they heard that Krishna is entering, all of them started running towards their balconies, towards their doorways to have the first glimpse of Krishna. The perverted reflection of that we find in today's world where rock stars, film stars, you know, sports stars, when they move around from one place to another, people run like crazy, you know, to watch them, to see them, to touch them, to, you know, giving them flying kisses and whatever, you know. The same desperation is there here, but it's in a positive way. The perverted reflection of what happens in Mathura happens in, you know, in cities like Bombay and other places. So when Krishna was entering, the women were so eager to see Krishna's glance that they wore their cloth up backwards. And they wore only earring in one ear. And they wore anklets in one leg. And they wore kajal in one eye. And they started running towards the doorways and balconies. In Mathura, this is not so common. You know, in cities, women are more conscious of how their appearance is. And here, city like Mathura, generally their consciousness is, they are very conscious of how they are appearing. But suddenly over here, they just forgot all that. They just ran. It is explained that some of the women, they were getting married. And they were doing feras. They were doing their, you know,
circumambulating the fire with their husband. Suddenly in the middle they ran away. Right in the middle of their circumambulating, they ran. They took a tangent and ran out. And when Krishna was walking, the walk of Krishna was a festival to so many eyes. Just like here, it is explained that the citizens of Vidarbha made their eyes into cups and they were drinking the nectar of Krishna's lotus face as honey. Similarly, all the women, they started running and they wanted to see Krishna. When one hears the glories of Krishna, that hearing of the glories of Krishna leads one to have darshan. And that darshan leads one to appreciate Krishna better. So here, the women of Mathura have been hearing about Krishna for quite some time. Now that hearing has manifested in the form of a darshan. And this darshan is going to manifest in the form of more appreciation for Krishna. So when Krishna walked and all these women were glancing at Krishna, they were showering flowers on Krishna. Of course, on a practical level, they couldn't shower any flowers because they were citizens of Kamsa and plus they had their own families and so many things. But it explained that they were showering flowers in the form of their smiles. Their smiles were like flowers showering on Krishna. There are two ways to convey love. One is a gross way and one is a subtle way. Gross way of conveying love is something that is a part of this world. And the subtle way of conveying love is what is a part of the spiritual world. Love doesn't necessarily need any kind of gross manifestation. But subtle manifestations are also enough to indicate a great amount of love. Here, the women of Mathura, they were helpless. They couldn't afford to reciprocate with Krishna in the way they wanted. But in the most subtle way, they were doing exactly what they wanted to do on an external level. And Krishna was accepting all their smiles. And so basically there was a reciprocation of smiles. Krishna was smiling at them, glancing at all of them, and all the women of Mathura were glancing at Krishna. And each one felt Krishna is exactly looking at them and smiling. So the reciprocation was complete. The washerman, after that, when Krishna walked further, there was a washerman who came. The washerman, Krishna instructed him, "Give me the cloth." The washerman said no, and then he lost his head. The whole understanding is that the washerman was the most fortunate person in Mathura, because he was the only person that Krishna gave an instruction directly. Just imagine, all the people of Mathura were wanting the reciprocation with Krishna, and Krishna chose one person to reciprocate actually. He chose the washerman, he said, "I want your cloth." So who is fortunate in this world? People, a person who is most fortunate in this world is one, first, who gets a guru. And more fortunate than a person who gets a guru is one who can hear from a guru. And more fortunate is one who can not just have a guru, hear from a guru, but get an instruction from a guru. But in spite of having one, hearing from one, and getting an instruction from one, if one doesn't follow, that person becomes most unfortunate. So here in Mathura, the washerman was supposed to be the most fortunate person because he was the only one whom Krishna was directly reciprocating in a tangible way. But unfortunately, there are many people who, even after getting tangible reciprocation, they don't know how to handle that reciprocation. They take it for granted and they become unfortunate. And naturally, he lost his head. Eventually, Krishna went and met Sudama, the florist. And Sudama received Krishna with all his heart, completely opened. This time, Krishna didn't ask him for anything. Krishna went and stood outside his shop. And Sudama, he asked Krishna, "What can I do for you?" And Krishna, at this point of time, he didn't tell Sudama what to do. He only told Sudama, "Use your intelligence." So, previously, Krishna gave the washerman instruction, what to do. But that fellow never used his intelligence. He didn't even have to use his intelligence. He has to just follow the instruction. Over here, Krishna didn't give Sudama instruction of what to do. He told him, use your intelligence. So essentially, there are two types of disciples. One is on a gross level, where the guru tells you what to do exactly, and still you don't understand it. And here is another type of disciple who even on the subtlest level understands what a guru wants and does it. Krishna didn't have to tell Sudama what he wants. He went and stood there and he told him, use your intelligence. This is a higher understanding. And this is an understanding of greater trust from a spiritual master's perspective. Sudama reciprocated with Krishna by giving him a beautiful garland. And then Krishna went further and he met Kubja. So the reciprocation, the way Kubja received Krishna is also very interesting. And the way Krishna reciprocated with Kubja is also very interesting. So, when Krishna jokes, it is serious for us. But when we make plans, it is a joke for Krishna. Krishna, he was joking with Kubja, but in that joke, there was a serious element involved. He was telling Kubja that you are looking very beautiful. Apparently, to everybody it seemed a joke. To his friends it seemed a joke. But actually, it was not a joke. It was a reality. Because Krishna converted that joke into a reality in one moment. So many times, when we make our plans, we are very serious about our plans. But the question is God serious about our plans as much? You know, for our plans which are so serious becomes a joke for Krishna. And Krishna's jokes become the most serious thing for us in our lives. So therefore, one has to be very careful of what type of planning one does. Of course, even if your plan gives laughter to Krishna, that also is service in one way. But you shouldn't be serious when Krishna is laughing. So most people in this world, when they make their plans, they become very serious about their plans. And they become so serious about their plans that they just don't want to let go. And when they see Krishna is laughing, in whatever way, they just feel so irritated. Why is God laughing when I am serious? So then Krishna, after he reciprocated Kubja, eventually the next day he enters into the wrestling arena. There are many other episodes that happen in between. But the entry into the wrestling arena again invokes so many elements of emotions in different personalities. And each personality looks at Krishna in very unique ways. When the wrestlers look at Krishna, they see that a Vajra is entering, thunderbolt is entering. They see this person is an epitome of strength. When the men of Mathura, they see Krishna, they see that here is the best of men entering. When the women of Mathura, they see Cupid entering, Kamadeva personified entering. When the coward friends of Krishna, they see Krishna entering, they are excited, their friend is entering. So they are like, you know, cheering, and they are like, you know, the original cheering team, you know. And they are really excited that their friend is going to, I mean, their thought is that we have practiced enough in Vrindavan, wrestling and all that, you know. Every day we have trained up Krishna nicely, and now he is getting a chance to exhibit his power, you know. Basically our training is going to be seen now. The impious kings, when they saw Krishna, they saw their destroyer entering. When the parents of Krishna, Devaki, Vasudev, Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, they saw Krishna, they saw a small baby entering. However old a child grows, the parents cannot see anything beyond a small baby. When Kamsa saw Krishna entering, he saw death personified entering, Yamaraj entering. When the priests and the offenders, they saw Krishna entering, they saw an ordinary mundane person entering. And they started finding faults. They said, who this fellow is? He is the one who steals other people's wives. He is the one who kills innocent animals. Agasur, Bakasur, you know, Arishtasur. For them, they were all innocent animals. And Krishna is just killing all innocent animals in Vrindavan. And here, see, he killed one more innocent animal, the Kolapiya, the elephant. And he's carrying the tusk of the elephant on his shoulder. And look at him, he's all bloody, you know, so dirty, so contaminated. So from the priest's perspective, this is what they were seeing. The yogis, when they were looking at Krishna, they were looking at Parabrahma entering. Can you imagine what excitement that the yogis are having? The very person that they are focusing on in their heart, all life long, constantly meditating on, trying to capture that form of the Lord in their heart, he's entering physically into the arena. And when the Vrishnis, they saw Krishna entering, they saw their most worshipable Lord entering. So different people have different perceptions of the Lord. So the whole idea is, what quality of hearing you do, that is the quality of chanting you do. So
if you study all these 10 different personalities who saw Krishna, and they saw Krishna in different 10 different ways, we make out what is the quality of the hearing they have done. Each one, they heard Krishna in a specific mood. And because they heard and they meditated on Krishna in a specific mood, Krishna manifested in front of them in that mood. So the quality of hearing with which we hear, the quality of consciousness with which we hear, and the mood with which we hear, that is the way Krishna manifests in people's lives. That is the way from hearing comes chanting, kirtanam. So when you hear in a particular way, that is the mood in which you will be able to speak about Krishna. And when you speak about Krishna in that particular way, eventually that kirtanam leads to darshanam. And when you have the darshanam, that is the mood in which you will be able to see Krishna also. And when you have the darshanam, that is the mood in which you will be able to absorb yourself in Krishna's presence in your life. And that is the exact mood in which you will be able to do seva. So, hearing and service are very much connected to each other. The quality of your hearing determines the quality of your speaking or your kirtanam, the quality of your chanting. And the quality of your chanting determines the quality of the way you have darshan of the Lord. Having darshan of the Lord is not just physically seeing the deities. Having darshan of the Lord is also physically seeing Krishna's presence in your life. And the way you have darshan of the Lord, that is the way in which you will be able to absorb yourself in Krishna. That is the mood in which you will be able to absorb yourself in Krishna all day long, all life long. And the mood in which you absorb yourself in Krishna, that is the mood in which you will be able to serve Krishna all your life. So, the quality of your service and the quality of your hearing are very much connected to one another. Because spiritual life begins with hearing. So when Krishna entered Mathura in this particular way, Krishna, so many wonderful qualities were manifesting and so many different people were seeing Krishna in different ways. There's another story of how Krishna enters another place and this creates a totally different mood. This story comes towards the end of the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto. Where one time in the city of Dwarka, when Ugrasen was ruling, a Brahmana comes running into the court and really starts shouting at Ugrasen. And he brings along with him a dead child, a dead baby. And he puts him on the floor and he tells Ugrasen, "What kind of a king are you? You are the most impious king and you are the most sinful king. Therefore, in your kingdom, my son has died just after he was born." Ugrasen was bewildered. He didn't know what to say. And then the same situation happened every time. 9 consecutive times. Constantly. Every child would be born dead. He would come and start shouting at Ugrasen. Nobody could do anything. 9th time, Arjuna was personally present over there. And Arjuna said, "What kind of a kingdom is this? A Brahmana is coming and crying in front of the king and the king is helpless. And the two, not once, 9 times. This kingdom is the most useless kingdom, it looks like." Arjuna actually started criticizing the kingdom of Dwarka. Can you imagine? Arjuna actually, you know, speaking words that were heavy. And then Arjuna told the Brahmana that, "Don't worry. This time when you have your child, I will come and protect your son. Let's see who will kidnap, who will take your child." And Brahmana, he said, "Come on. Who are you? Anirudh, Pradyumna, Vasudev, Sankarshan, all these personalities were the most powerful personality, could not do anything. And who are you?" Arjuna said, "I am neither Anirudh, neither Pradyumna, nor Krishna. I am Gandivadhari Arjun. I will do it." So everybody was bewildered in that courtroom. You know, and Arjuna was really proud about his own powers. And then eventually he promised the Brahmana, and the Brahmana went away. When the time came, he called Arjuna. Arjuna came and stood outside the house of the Brahmana. He offered his obeisance to Lord Shiva, changed parties. And then he, you know, made a palace of arrows and covered the whole maternity house of the Brahmana's wife. And he was standing outside, waiting, what will happen? Right in front of him, as soon as the child was born, the child didn't die. Child physically flew into the sky, disappeared. Arjuna got completely bewildered. He started running here and there. He went to first Samyamani, the abode of Yamaraj,
to find if the sun is there. The sun was not there in Yamaraj's kingdom. Then he went to Indra's kingdom, then he went to Agni's kingdom, then he went to Vayu's kingdom, then he went to Varuna's kingdom. Practically he went everywhere. Vishnu Chakravarti explains that he didn't go to Lord Shiva's kingdom because he has a lot of confidence in Lord Shiva that he will never kidnap him, you know. And after traveling everywhere, he just couldn't find him. He was completely bewildered. Then he came and the Brahmana, he started criticizing Arjuna like anything. I mean, from the time that the child disappeared, the Brahmana started blasting him. He said, I shouldn't have trusted you only. If Anirudh, Pradyumna, Krishna himself couldn't do anything, who are you? And Arjuna couldn't take it. Therefore, he started running to all these places. And finally, after trying his best, he came back and he gave up. And he told this Brahmana that I will commit suicide now because I couldn't serve you. He actually won't enter fire. That time Krishna comes. It's very interesting to note that Krishna doesn't interfere at all in this whole pastime. One whole year, Arjuna had taken a vow. Krishna never interfered only. Krishna never asked Arjuna, you know, are you sure that you will do it? You know, all through the Mahabharata, all through Arjuna's struggles, Krishna was always there to help him. But at this point of time when Arjuna really was struggling, Krishna didn't interfere at all. Why? Because Arjuna never came with the right mood. Before the war of Kurukshetra, Arjuna came to Krishna helplessly. And here before this war, Arjuna never came because he felt that I can do it without Krishna. And Krishna kept quiet. So the role of the Lord is to assist in the way you want him to assist. Krishna never interferes or Krishna never imposes himself into somebody's life beyond the call. So when Arjuna finally decided that I can't do anything and his helplessness manifested a little bit, then Krishna came. The most conducive environment to actually perceive Krishna in one's life is the environment of helplessness. And the environment where you feel that I can't do it. Most of the times when we feel that we can do it, that is the time when Krishna is absent. He is silently watching. And when the moment we feel that we can't do it, that is the time when Krishna becomes active. And he is actively assisting. And Krishna told Arjuna, you don't die, you come with me, I'll take you. And he made him sit on his chariot. And they both started proceeding. They crossed seven islands, seven oceans. And then they crossed the Loka planets. And then there was pitch darkness, absolutely nothing. The horses were getting bewildered. They didn't know where to go. And then Krishna sent a Sudarshan Chakra ahead, created light, created path. Blindness is a result of ignorance. Arjuna, he felt that he could see everything. He had control over everything. He didn't realize that actually he was in darkness. And Sudarshan is needed to gain light to understand where we are going wrong. So Arjuna went wrong in one place, in the understanding that I don't need Krishna. And Krishna is showing through the Sudarshan that we need Krishna's presence whenever there is darkness in our life, whenever there is absence of light in our life. And Sudarshan guided the horses and the chariot went ahead. And suddenly they reached the Brahma Jyoti. The light of the Brahma Jyoti was so glaring and so effulgent that practically Arjuna became blind. He couldn't see. And he closed his eyes, and in that, with closed eyes, they were proceeding ahead. And they reached the abode of Mahavishnu. And there was an ocean, they crossed the ocean, and they reached a beautiful palace. And in that palace, there was a huge snake, Anantashesh, with thousands of hoods. And though it was such a ferocious snake, it was looking so gentle. And on that snake bed was lying Lord Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu was smiling. And when Krishna and Arjuna went in front of Mahavishnu, they both bowed to him. Krishna bowed to himself. And Arjuna, he was spellbounded seeing Mahavishnu's splendor. And then Mahavishnu, he received Krishna in a way that bewildered Arjuna completely. Mahavishnu told Krishna that I know why you all are here. And don't worry, I have all the sons of the Brahmanas. Krishna asked him, why did you do this? Why did you take away the sons of the Brahmanas? And Mahavishnu said, my dear Lord, I wanted to have darshan of you. I wanted to see you. Can you imagine Arjuna's shock of, you know, considering Krishna to be an ordinary friend of his, considering himself to be more powerful than Krishna. And here is Mahavishnu, the supreme person, he is saying that I wanted to see you. So Arjuna was completely bewildered.
And when they brought the 10 children, and the children were exactly in the same shape as they went, then they were practically babies. 10 babies of the same age practically, you know. So the Krishna and Arjun had to do babysitting on the way back. They got the 10 babies. But on the way, Arjuna had only one thought in his mind. And the thought that Arjuna had in his mind was, all extraordinary powers are only manifestations of Krishna's mercy. Any person exhibiting any extraordinary power, any vibhuti, is the manifestation of Krishna's mercy. The 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is continuing here, where Arjuna, he heard enough about how Krishna is this and this Krishna is that. But now Krishna, Arjuna is seeing what Krishna is, and what Krishna is the source of practically everything. Another very interesting episode where we find Krishna's entry is very beautifully enacted in the Mahabharata, where the Pandavas, so generally whenever Krishna enters, there is a lot of opulence, there is a lot of pomp, there is a lot of festival. When Krishna entered Mahavishnu's abode, there was like a reception for Krishna. And Mahavishnu was really enthralled seeing Krishna's presence. So all this was in awe and reverence. But every time Krishna enters, he doesn't expect awe and reverence. Sometimes the greatest reception is a reception of love. When the Pandavas were exiled in the forest and they had nothing practically, Krishna entered many times into their lives. During the episode of Durvasmuni, Krishna did enter. But another time Krishna entered, this is much before the Durvasmuni episode, just when the Pandavas were exiled and they were in the forest, that time Krishna entered into, came to visit them with Satyabhama. And this was in Kamyakavan. And when Krishna and Satyabhama entered into the house of the Pandavas, Krishna started telling Yudhishthira Maharaj about how he is taking care of their sons nicely, and how their sons are getting trained by Pradyumna, his own son, in warfare and martial arts nicely. And they exchanged greetings. The Pandavas were expressing their love for Krishna in unlimited ways. So this entry of Krishna into their life actually exhibited a lot of hope for the Pandavas. Can you imagine, at a time when everybody had abandoned them, the most important people of their lives had abandoned them, people whom they had the most faith in had abandoned them, their wealth abandoned them, their kingdom abandoned them, practically everything the Pandavas thought was theirs gave them up. And the only person at this point of time coming into their life voluntarily is Krishna. So when the world leaves you, Krishna enters into you. So the whole understanding over here is that Krishna doesn't depend on opulences to enter. He depends on love to enter. So when Krishna entered into the hut of the Pandavas and they were discussing, suddenly in the midst of the whole discussion, Markandeya Rishi comes in. And Markandeya Rishi, when he enters into Yudhishthira Maharaj's hut, all the Pandavas are quite shocked to see such a powerful sage. He is the oldest living personality in creation, but he was looking like a 16-year-old boy. And when Markandeya Rishi entered, all of them got up, received him, and Yudhishthira Maharaj started having a discussion with Markandeya Rishi. And this discussion, Yudhishthira Maharaj started asking him philosophical questions about life and about death. And then Markandeya Rishi, in the middle of the discussion, just out of the whole context, he gets into another discussion. So basically, Markandeya Rishi came only to tell this. And Markandeya Rishi came only at that, the right time when Krishna was personally present over there to tell them this. And Yudhishthira Maharaj's discussion was going into the soul, you know, why people suffer and all that. And Markandeya Rishi brought the whole discussion to the creation. How this world is created by the Lord personally. And then he said, I want to share with you all an experience that I had in my life. And Markandeya Rishi starts talking about how once in his life, he wanted to experience the universal destruction. And suddenly in front of him, the whole universe was destroyed with an inundation of water. An unlimited amount of water started flooding in. The ocean started covering the whole universe. Practically there was no land left. And there was no living entities left. No trees, no plants, no animals, nothing, no human beings, no civilization at all. Only ocean. Only ocean. Can you imagine if you're traveling over an ocean? You know, the ocean is so vast. You just can't see anything anywhere. So everywhere there was this ocean, and Markandeya Rishi was completely bewildered. Seasickness,
You can imagine to what extent Markandeya Rishi would have had, you know. He didn't even have a boat. If there was a boat, at least there is some stability. He didn't even have a boat. He had to move around in the ocean itself. And at some point of time, when he was moving around in the ocean, he saw a banyan leaf on which he saw a blue boy lying on the leaf smiling. And Markandeya Rishi, when he saw this small child on this banyan leaf, he saw that the child was effulgent, shining brilliantly. His eyes were like fully blown lotuses. And this boy had a bluish black complexion. And this boy was smiling and he was sucking his toenails. He was sucking his toes. Markandeya Rishi was completely bewildered seeing that child in the middle of the whole ocean. And he saw in the chest of the child, there was a mark of the Shrivatsa. Shrivatsa mark was there on the chest of the child. And the child started speaking to Markandeya Rishi. So Markandeya Rishi was even more surprised. First of all, such a small baby, so helplessly floating in the ocean, and now the child is speaking to him. The child started telling Markandeya Rishi, "I know that you are eager for rest. I know that you are exhausted." So the child said, "Why don't you come into me and take rest for some time?" Markandeya Rishi didn't know what to say. And suddenly the child opened his mouth, and the Markandeya Rishi was helplessly dragged into the mouth of the child. And he entered in the mouth of the child and entered the belly of the child. And inside the belly of the child, Markandeya Rishi saw the exact creation, the exact earth which he was used to before seeing the universal destruction. And he saw civilizations, he saw kingdoms, he saw kings, he saw all the opulences of the world. He was completely bewildered inside the womb, inside the stomach of the child. And he was roaming around inside. And the only thing he did was he continued praying with his words and thoughts. Constantly praying to the child within whom he was. And after some time, as Markandeya Rishi was worshipping the Lord like that, inside his womb, suddenly Markandeya Rishi came out again. And again he was in the middle of the ocean, and the child was smiling and sucking his toes. So Markandeya Rishi was now completely bewildered. He took that lotus feet of the child and put it on his head. And he started worshipping the Lord with prayers. He started glorifying the Lord with chosen prayers. And as Markandeya Rishi touched the lotus feet of the Lord on his head, and he was offering prayers to the Lord, everything disappeared, and the same creation which he was used to before the destruction manifested again. And then Markandeya Rishi, he completed his description to the Pandavas, and he told Yudhishthira Maharaj that the child, he came to dispel my illusion. The child dispelled the illusion with knowledge. And the child explained to me who he really was, how he was a supreme lord. And then I came back to the reality of this world. And Markandeya Rishi tells the Pandavas that same child is this Krishna who is standing in front of you. And if Krishna is there in your life, there is nothing to worry. There is nothing to, be anxiety about. And Markandeya Rishi told Yudhishthira Maharaj that make sure that you always have Krishna in your heart. And make sure that when Krishna enters into your life, you receive him properly. And Markandeya Rishi was, telling about his own experience to just tell them that don't take Krishna for granted. Don't take Krishna to be an ordinary child or to be an ordinary human being. He is different and he is special. And in this mood, the Pandavas learned from Markandeya Rishi how to take care of Krishna and how to receive Krishna in their lives. So in this whole episode of Rukmini receiving Krishna, the citizens of Vidarbha receiving Krishna, Bhishmaka receiving Krishna, we find there is a consistency. Whether it is the citizens of Mathura, whether it is the women of Mathura, whether it is all the favorable people receiving Krishna in Mathura, or it is the Pandavas helplessly receiving Krishna in the forest alone, or it is Mahavishnu receiving Krishna in his abode, or whether it is Krishna being received in the planet of Varuna, whether it is Krishna being received in the Yamaraja's planet, wherever it is, the reception of Krishna is exactly the same. And the most amazing reception of Krishna happens in the heart when Krishna enters through the process of hearing. When Krishna enters through the process of hearing, Shravanam, Krishna manifests in the form of Kirtanam, in the form of words, in the form of inspirational inspiration. And Krishna, when he manifests in the form of inspiration, he transforms into absorption. And that mode of absorption transforms into the mode of service. And in this way, we find that Bhishmaka here, he has heard about Krishna sufficiently.
And that hearing has given him the opportunity to glorify Krishna when he sees Krishna. And that glorification helps him understand Krishna properly when he's having darshan of Krishna. And that glorification is helping him to become absorbed in Krishna, waiting for Krishna to become his son-in-law. And that absorption is giving him an opportunity to serve Krishna by offering him palaces, offering him so many opulences. And that absorption, that service will actually bring the grace of Krishna into our lives. Hare Krishna, I would like to stop here. Very grateful to all of you all for your patient listening. And if there's anything I've spoken which is beyond my realizations, please forgive me. If there's anything that is conducive to our spiritual lives, please accept it. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.